This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, what's shaking, everybody? Welcome to an Overreaction Monday podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined by Anwar Richardson. We are overreacting to Tom Herman's Monday press conference. It just ended, I don't know, like 10 minutes ago, and Anwar and I are here to overreact to what? I'm not exactly sure. We typically find stuff pretty easily, Anwar. You and I have not discussed this. I kind of feel like the reaction to the podcast is very similar to our reaction when we greeted each other a moment ago. It was like, you're ready to get started? Normally, I have to say, stop, let's save it for the podcast. I don't know. Today was about as overreactionable as a press conference could get, I thought.
Yeah, it's interesting because I wasn't quite sure what he was going to say, you know, especially based off of last week, right? And you know, the things that we discussed based off of that whole press conference. So this was more of a calm, docile Tom Herman who, I thought at some times, you know, he might do a victory lap when asked about, you know, maybe the success of that 2017, you know, a transition class. And he pointed out a couple of things and, but for overall, it was kind of just like there. Like, it was just like, I'm here. It was informative. I don't know if he was trying to be measured or not, but he was basically, hey, it was just about talking about a game and a good Iowa State team. And that was pretty much it.
Well, he didn't get provoked. I mean, nobody asked him anything about, I mean, look, you know, you're the only Orange Blood representative that was there. So it wasn't like I was on the call. So I can't hold people's feet to the fire and get too pissy about it because it wasn't like I was on the call. Right. So I could have just as easily got on the call and raised some hell and asked some questions. I didn't. So I will call myself out in saying that, but you know, we had a question. There were like 20 other questions. Nobody went into that area. It was strange for me, Anwar, in the sense that, I mean, I kind of get it because I don't think any reporter in this market typically wants to be that guy goes into the taboo territory. Like, I think some people think Kirk Bowles is that guy. I don't think Kirk is automatically that guy. I think there are people that think that you are that guy or that Brian Davis. I don't think anybody wants to be known as the guy who every time there's a press conference, they're the one who brings the sharp stick. And today felt like a day where it's the week of Thanksgiving and apparently nobody wanted to go down that road, which is strange. Because when you asked your question a week ago, it literally filled a week's worth of content. So it's strange to me that the thing that filled a week's worth of content was completely ignored today in over 30 minutes of conversation. I felt like once we hit the 15-minute mark, it was like, okay, no, literally nobody's going to bring up any of the other stuff. This is going to be meat and potatoes, Texas and Iowa State and senior games and days off. And it was as if this football program lives in a vacuum where like none of this other outside stuff exists. And again, it was just strange for me because literally last week, everybody wrote content pieces, think pieces, all kinds of pieces based off of you asking about his job security. Nobody that last week that didn't get a question in didn't have a single follow-up question. I wonder if Herman preferred, I don't know. My overreaction is just kind of surprised that it was so straight laced and oblivious to this huge cloud that covers the program that isn't going away just because we didn't talk about it today. I don't know. I'm rambling.
Well, yeah,
sorry.
No, and of course, you know, the petty part of me is those who critiqued my question, they had an opportunity to show everyone how it's done today. I mean, for those who, said, he could have done this, maybe should have done this, whatever. Opportunity was there. You could have just said, like, hey, man, let me show you how you freaking ask a question. Like, what he did, it was whatever. Let me show you. No one's willing to do that. Okay. So it just, it goes to show what you're saying about, I can't remember. There's those who report the news and those who talk about those
who report the news. Yes.
Yeah. And that just kind of comes down to it, as if it's, at the end of the day, I think at a lot of these press conferences, if I don't ask it or Brian David doesn't ask the proverbial tough question, it's just not going to get asked. And that's just not how it's built. I mean, we got the Thanksgiving Day question, Kesh, before, the other cloud question, right? We got the, what are you going to do for Thanksgiving this week question, which, by the way, that is always my indication that this press conference is over.
Well, and Bianco said, I think this is one of these instances where a guy raised his hand to ask a question. Mm-hmm. And he was last, and Bianco was like, this is the last question. And I don't think the guy had a question. I think there's an interesting thing that comes out of so he went with Thanksgiving.
I hate Thanksgiving questions.
And it was interesting. Like, I feel like Herman's been asked that question every year and he answers it the same way every year. Like,
probably, like, we got to go back and ask Anthony. Anthony would know, because Anthony asked it every year.
Anthony would be like, what's your favorite Thanksgiving?
Yes. Yes.
Like,
yes,
side. Yes. He would have gone really narrow, like favorite kind of pie. And then, and I get it. Like, if you asked everybody in the football program their favorite kind of pie, you come up with an interesting little story there. Like, I kind of get that, but yeah. Real quick on war, 'cause I don't want to lose before I forget this. I think you said, well, if I or Brian don't ask the difficult questions, they don't get asked. I think what happened was you guys had questions. They didn't specifically go there, and everybody else took y'all's lead. And maybe it wouldn't have mattered anyway, right? Because they didn't ask a question last week when they had a chance. But I think if anybody was thinking about it, they were probably like, are Brian and Anwar going to do it? And if they didn't, ain't nobody else going to do it. So, it's
gotta be built for that. You also got to be built to take that smoke.
It's a heavy burden to be the guy that, because I thought your question was really interesting, though, and I'm glad it got asked. The weird little thing about Herm, and I didn't like his answer, quite frankly. Like, it's like
someone, I don't think he even answered it.
I think it's like someone saying, man, I like your chicken, man. What do you put in it? It's like, I don't even know. I want to hear you tell me that there's some secret spices and that you have like it tasted good. And what you essentially said was, Tom, the meal you serve when you have time to like prepare it always tastes really good. Like, what do you guys do to make the meal taste really good? And he was like, I wish I could tell you. I was like, never mind. But it was a great question, and that they have 20 days off. And this is a coach that seemingly does his best work when they have this type of thing. And he all but indicated it is part of no trend that he can ascertain the reasons for. And it's just pure luck at this point. Right.
Well, yeah. Yes. And then what he kind of later after that kind of starts saying, well, we've gone 20 games without playing and we really haven't had that before. And I'm thinking, well, that's every year of a bowl game. Don't you go to, that much time without playing? And most of these guys spend, the first couple of weeks on the road recruiting. Right. It's only like the last couple that they really start getting into bowl prep. So, yeah, it is. It's kind of so it's an interesting thing, because I think this is why I kind of wrote on Sunday, and I still stand by. Like, when you're going to be healthy, as healthy as you've been all year long. He's put Keyonte Ingram at questionable, which, I don't know if that gives Texas an advantage if he plays.
This ain't the week.
Yeah, I mean, you need a dynamic playmaker. You need Bijan busting out, for those 80 yards or for two carries, in my opinion.
Well, you don't need a guy that's going to fumble. against maybe the best defense in the conference. Like, Keontae, you heal up for Kansas. It'll be all right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so, you know, you've got Coburn that's going to be healthy, and Joshua Moore is healthy. So, to me, you got your full arsenal. So, yeah, I think, you know, to me, that at this point, those 20 days catch, okay, you could say you haven't played, but he, one of the things he said in the answer to my question was how key rest was, right? He mentioned that, you know, that was, as he's trying to figure it out, the thought process, which I guess this shows that questions aren't staged. You know, his thought process, he started talking about, well, rest is important. Well, you've also got, you've got a lot of rest. You've got a lot of rest. And I'll tell you what, whatever, even though Tom Herman has denied that Sam Ehlinger is any kind of injured, I still got to believe, catch Sam Ehlinger having 3 weeks to heal up quick, because coach said he's always hurt, right? He said that a few weeks ago. He's always hurt.
If he's tired of that question, he's the one that – he literally, Tom Herman's the one that brought it up. He was like, oh, he's always hurt. He's always – and, like, he was so vague in bringing it up. He was so nonspecific that a whole week went by, and everybody was like, I wonder what specifically Tom was talking about. Because he admitted that Ehlinger wasn't 100% or I don't know, like, it was so vague. And then the next week he was like, oh, he's fine. Where were you guys getting this whole he's hurt thing? He's fine. He's not injured. It was like, well, no, literally last week you said he was hurt. Like, that's the only reason. So, yeah, like he's continued to, like, I don't know. That's it, the last couple of weeks on where I've come across, like, that was a comment that came out of his mouth that he wished he hadn't made. He's been trying to grab that Sam's hurt comment back for 3 weeks now. It's like, I don't know where you guys are getting this. You cannot put that genie back into the bottle. He's trying, but we heard it. And it just happened to be a little to go along with the things that our eyeballs were telling us. So, like, it can't be taken back. Correct. If Sam was in, like, Joe Burrow form from last year and he was like, Sam's not hurt, we'd be like, Sam's not hurt. You know what I mean? Like, we'd be completely fine. It hasn't gone down like that. Our eyes tell us that Sam's doesn't quite look like we've seen him before, but whatever. Anwar, you know who enjoyed the hell out of this press conference?
Do I know who enjoyed it?
More than anybody else on the face of the planet. Yes.
Oh, this is great. Who?
Christo Conti.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Let's go for it.
Well, nothing came out of this press conference that he'd had to get a phone call from a big money donor about. Mm. He didn't get a phone call. His name wasn't mentioned. A man that, like, has not come up for air since July, since that whole thing went down in July. He's been nowhere to be found with a pen and a paper and a reporter and a microphone, but he's been asked. He's been asked all throughout the last 4 months to come out for air. And, you know, last week, I guarantee you last week, multiple reporting services would have reached out to Del Conte and been like, care to comment? And the answer would have been no, because he didn't comment. And there just was, he gets to go enjoy his Thanksgiving and he gets to go into this game. Nobody will be calling to hear an opinion from Chris Del Conte leading up to this game. And that's what Chris Del Conte wants. I think Herman, it's weird. Look, if you and I privately pulled Tom Herman aside and said, Tom, there are a couple of ways that you could have approached this. I mean, strategically, I think you needed to be more active and, like, being your own hype man. I wrote about my 10 thoughts from the weekend. Like, there were some things I think he needed to be active and doing in terms of creating the narrative by which, forget the fans, that the national media uses to discuss this team. And if he came away and if I had said, I think you left some meat on the bone, and he says, Ketch, my head hurts every week. Goddamn drama left and right. And I know what you're saying, but I just need to focus on football this week. I don't need to hear from my boss. I don't need to hear about what people on Orange. I don't need to hear about your podcast. I just want to get through Friday with peace of mind, focused on my job and, like, not having an outside distraction. I would completely understand that. I still think it would be a bad strategic decision, but I understand why you would want to do that. It feels like, I don't know, there's a lot of ways to psychoanalyze this thing, Anwar, but come hell or high water, now words, there are no words now that matter at all. And I wonder, will Tom say some words today that matter? It's all going to be about what happens on Friday. And maybe it was always going to be that way. I just think that from my perspective, if I'm Tom Herman's agent, I think that this is I guess where it comes down to, Anwar. And I apologize. I'm going to give you the floor and I'll shut the hell up. If Tom wins the Big 12 championship, everybody knows that Tom's coming back. This is where I think you'll agree with me. Where it gets murky is if Texas runs the table, gets to the Big 12 championship game, and loses. I have not had a source tell me 1,000% in that scenario he's gone. I think he's gone. But you and I did this thing on the podcast, on the modcast on Thursday, where it was like, you were the only one. It was like, nah, I need to see Texas have balls before I just assume that they have balls. They hadn't shown me that yet. And I think it's murky. Like, if they lose Saturday, it's not murky. But if it gets to 8-2 and that team just went on a 6-game win streak and they just posted the best regular season win percentage of any school or any team that Texas has had since 2009, and it still feels like he's on shaky ground, to me, this is like moments like today is where he can start painting a better picture of the narrative he wants to exist in that moment. And I think that, I don't know, I think him not doing it just leaves him open, a little more open than he could necessarily be if, when we get to 8-2, he's been on the media assault nonstop talking about the job he's doing compared historically and all of these other things. And I don't know, today he just looked like a coach that wanted to get through the week.
I think the way that maybe he would approach it versus the way we would approach it would probably be two different things, because I know that I probably would have come in there and you probably would have done the same and said, okay, look, you know, there's 3 games left in the regular season. But let's just talk about the success of this year's team. I would have catapulted the questions from, you know, the 2017 transition class and talked about what we built and to get to here. But I mean, to your point, Ketch, yes, mentioned, hey, we can finish with the highest winning percentage since the 2009 national championship team. You can go to the second Big 12 championship within the past 3 years, right? He did mention Sam Ellinger and going to the Senior Bowl. But, you know, first quarterback potentially drafted since Colt McCoy. That's a long ass time. That's a lot of, and Ketch, you've been doing this for a long time in the state. That means there was a hell of a lot of misses by this program to even get to that point, right? You've got Sam Cosby. You know, this is where I would have said, you know, the easiest thing to do, Ketch, is to poke at recruiting rankings, because no one can really fight back, right? It's just rankings. You can easily point at rankings. You can point at rivals, but rivals is a body. You know, it's not just one particular. It's not saying the Lone Star recruiting ranking said this. You know, and so for Sam, he could have said, look, he freaking had Sam Cosby as a little bit of a 3-star. Oh, but guess what? By the way, he's probably going to get drafted. And by the way, that'll be our second offensive lineman that we've had drafted since we've been here. You know, go back to before us and how many offensive linemen were getting drafted, right? I mean, he did, again, there's a couple little things. I think he did it. Like, he mentioned Bijan, but he didn't have his numbers about Bijan having, you know, more rushing yards than any other 5-star. He said 5-stars, 4-stars. I definitely know he has more than any other 5-star in his class. So if you're Tom Herman, like, there's probably some meat left on the bone where you could have really just kind of pumped up some of your accolades and said, okay, I hear what you guys are saying, and people are focused in on, you know, the 2-point loss to TCU or the 8-point loss to Oklahoma. But if you look back, man, we've been actually doing a pretty damn good job. That's what he could have done. But to your point, if you are Tom Herman, if you just been dealing with a hellstorm all year long,
And it does go back to July. Like, it ain't, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm guessing he's bought stock in those little stress squeezy things that people buy.
Yes.
Stress balls.
Yes. Stress balls.
He's wearing them out.
So I understand if Tom Herman is just like, you know what? I got some family in town. You know, I just want to just go ahead and chill with Michelle, chill with the fam, focus in on this week. And I don't want Chris Del Conde up my ass. I don't want anybody tweeting at me. I don't need Fernando Lovo telling me what's out there. Like, I just don't want none of that smoke this week. If that was his approach, and he said, I just want 1 week of peace. Just 1 week of peace. All right, coach, you've got your 1 week of peace.
I can't be mad at him for that. Like, I can't. Like, I get it. And honestly, like, if Del Conte had come to him before the week and said, look, if you don't piss on my Cheerios the week of Thanksgiving, I'll come out. You know what I mean? Like, they could be that both of them were like, it's a short week. There's a game on Friday. Even in wars, there are times when for like Christmas, they call it off. You know, there's, you know, like a 48-hour, we ain't shooting anybody kind of a thing. Usually it's like around Christmas. It's Thanksgiving. I think what we saw this week was that behind the scenes, and you know what? Honestly, for you and I, this is the best thing that could have happened for us. This would be a quiet week. He showed up today. He waved a white flag on drama. And it just means that what you and I won't be doing for most of the week is taking phone calls from... This just won't be the week where that happens. I think now Del Conte gets to sit back and say, all right, beat Iowa State, big boy. Because Iowa State's his muscle. He didn't even have to pay him. They come into town. And he could do all the work that Chris Del Conte ever needs. And then Chris Del Conte can come out of this on war without ever having to answer a question about his role in Eyes of Texas, any of this stuff. And it's possible. If Herman loses this job, it's possible the next time we hear from Chris Del Conte is on the day that he's introducing a new head football coach, at which point nobody would have the guts to ask that question the day that a new coach is hired. Hey, Coach Meyer, great to have you here. If you don't mind, I need to go back and ask about 5 months ago. Chris, can you outline what you did? You know, like nobody's going to ask that question.
No.
So he gets to sit back. Look, Texas wins on Friday. I'm fascinated by the Monday press conference then. Tom might still be nervous because, like, Kansas State, I'm convinced that that game will be tricky. That there is no way that this Texas football program doesn't – if they beat Iowa State, they're going to make the Kansas State game difficult. They will. But – you can start to see light at the end of the tunnel, but still, Tom's foolish if he thinks that beating Iowa State and then winning those two games, if he thinks that 1,000% gets him in the clear, I think he's wrong. And I think that that's why he only has a couple of Mondays left now before his job status is determined to, you know, point the media in a direction with a narrative that changes the way this team is talked about. And I don't think it happened today. So, and I'm curious, like, I wonder how it's going to be talked about on this. One of the interesting things on war is Saturday. You can make a case that Texas and Iowa State's the most interesting game in the entire country. I mean, you've got what Notre Dame plays North Carolina. That's 2 versus 24. And there's another game I'm forgetting. But it's there's another game of ranked teams. But it's another one of those like really high ranked teams against. I'm not looking at the schedule in front of me, but Texas and Iowa State looks like on paper one of the most competitive games of the weekend. Between ranked teams is one of only 3 games. It's getting a lot of discussion in pregame nationally everywhere, not just on Fox because Fox would be having the game. So Urban Meyer talks about it, but they're going to talk about it on game day. Herb Street's going to give it some, like, all that attention's going to be there. And I wonder, I mean, I guess the game's played on Friday, so they'll avoid the Saturday thing. I guess the whole thing's just different and weird. I'm sitting here thinking about it like in the context of Saturday, but they'll miss all the shows. Game day will be the next day. That Saturday show on Fox will be the next day. So, you know.
Yeah, but if they lose.
Oh, it's over.
Those Saturday shows are going to be out of control.
Urban, that would be. The Fox show, they are flirting with asking and putting Urban Meyer on the spot. And I don't get the sense Urban Meyer is a big joking guy. So somebody earlier, the whole thing this weekend popped up, like, what's your favorite college town and everything. And there was some thought that, you know, they were trying, let me tell you something. Urban Meyer A doesn't tell those dudes anything. If you think he's telling Reggie Bush or Matt Leinart what's going on inside of his head, you don't know men like Urban Meyer very well. That is not his MO. And then the other thing is that dude doesn't, they reminds me of when Art Briles went on game day in 2014, whenever that, whatever his last year was. And literally that scandal had taken place that Saturday or that summer. And there had been all these questions about Baylor. Like every week there was something new on those rape allegations. And they go to game day in Waco and Art Briles is up there. And nobody from that game day set had the balls to ask him about this huge scandal that eventually took him down. That's because them coaches don't go on there unless it's very clear. Even when they're getting paid, they're very clear about what they won't and what they will and won't wade into. But we're about to get to a point where if Texas were to lose on Saturday, I don't know how Urban Meyer doesn't. I don't know how they get through that entire broadcast without talking about him and that. Because if Tom loses on Friday, one of the big stories nationally will be Texas lost the day before and Tom Herman is maybe not out, but like sinking through ice that is cracking. And the whole conversation changes.
Everything then becomes from, we go from, well, can it happen to, okay, well, now it's just a matter of when, you know, Urban is alpha, Urban controls stuff. Like he's not a guy that is going to be put on the spot. Like there's no way, you know, Matt Leinart is going to turn to him and just ask him a random question. That's just not going to happen, right? It will. So, you know, there'll be conversations. Now, I get the impression I've asked around about this. What I've been told from people that know Urban is that he won't comment on someone's job while they're still there and employed. Like he's old school like that. That's the code for him. So as long as Tom Herman is here, even on TV, he's not going to say anything about it. That's, you know, that's what I've been told by folks that are close to him. So, or at least who know him. It'll then just be, you know, at that point, just chaos. At that point, as far as what this looks like in. It would be chaotic because then they go to Kansas State and then, you know, then there's the Kansas games. You got the two road games. Heaven forbid either one of those gets postponed. But now here's the flip side. Catch. What if he wins? Because if he wins, then we're talking about, again, we don't know what happens against K-State, but you're really at that point, Catch, talking about one more tough game. That's it. One more tough game and then, I mean, you would assume that they go ahead and do what they need to do against Kansas, but there will be only one more. So what's the flip side that, hey, you know, Tom gets up and he gets this team ready and his defense plays even better than we've seen in previous weeks. And, you know, maybe Sam plays better because he's healthy-ish, you know, and what's the narrative, Catch? What's the narrative at that point?
Well, let me ask you a question. Because I think
you're gonna answer my question with a question?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And you're gonna answer it. I just want you to think for a second. On a scale of one it's a two-parter to answer your question. Next Monday, so 23 hours from now-ish, on a scale of 1 to 10, how big is Tom Herman's victory lap on a Monday after they've beaten Iowa State and now he's 6-2 and two incredibly winnable games away from reaching a line that was perceived to be further away than it was 2 years ago when people were jumping off the ship. And I'm reminded that you probably earlier than anybody was like, no, they're going to make it to the Big 12 championship game. And they did. How big is the victory lap on a scale of 1 to 10? Do we see a little bit of peacocking?
Not yet. I don't think the victory lap occurs. I think he plays it close to the vest because he still knows they got to go to Kansas State, and Kansas State has a pulse. I don't think we see it on that Monday.
So you think it's a 5 out of 10?
I would say like a 5. Yeah, I say a 5.
Okay, sure. Here's my follow up question. Next Monday, 23 hours ish, and Texas is lost, and Herman still has a job. But the season's over because they're going to wait until December to fire him because they want to get the buyout dollars down several million dollars. And that's important. On a scale of 1 to 10, following a loss, how sad is next Monday's press conference?
Oh, it's bad. Yeah. If following a loss, it might be. Okay, well, let's preface it. Sad for Tom Herman. Sad for Tom Herman, right?
Yeah, all the bastards that forgot to ask a question this week. Oh, they'll have a question next week.
Oh, after a loss? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They'll be able to, they'll be ready to kind of pile on and ask.
Oh, it would be such a pile hop.
Yes, yes. And yet Kurt will ask, why do you need to keep your job? And you know,
it'd just be so sad.
Yeah, it would be bad with two games left. It would definitely be a bad thing. It'll be ugly. I think it'd be really, really ugly. I mean, I think if he loses, you know, here's the question. I don't know if Monday will be worse than Friday.
It would be. Absolutely.
You think Monday would be worse than Friday?
Because I think there'd be a lame duckness. Like, there's just an immediate sadness that occurs after every loss where guys look like they've lost their dogs, right? Mm-hmm. But then, like, 2 days later, when you ask them about it, there's a difference between they're lost in their pain and it's far enough away that you can dig at it. Mm-hmm. And that's what Monday would be. You know what I mean? Like, you'd get like Kirk on Friday. That would be like, Tom, this looks really tough for your like long-term future. Can you talk? And then he'd give that answer. But if he had the job and he came back on Monday and then the pile hopping started, I asked you that because if you thought that Herman might take anything more than a 5, what a wild extreme, like a wild set of extremes based on the outcome of the game. So what we have now based on your answer is, he'll play it down the middle a little bit like he did today, or he'll be really sad. My thought was he might be able to bow up and flex a little bit next week, or it's a 9 or 10 on the sadness scale. Even that's a pretty, I'm excited for Friday's game now. I am. Let's have it. I have no idea what's going to happen. And I have no idea it is such a wide set of extremes in Anwar, unlike so many other crossroads games that it feels like happen every other week with Tom Herman. This feels like a real one. This doesn't, you know what I mean? Like he's, because when he loses to TCU, when he loses to Oklahoma, there still was a Houdini act to pull off. Even when they lose those games, you're like, as crazy as it sounds, you look at the schedule and you're like, that's a lot of winnable games. You didn't know about Oklahoma State, but every other game they've won, probably would think they should have won, at least before the season started. Oh man, I'm ready, man. I am so ready. I think this is the definable, sure thing, biggest crossroads moment of Tom Herman's entire career, because it's the first time he's entered one of these with no escape clause should he lose it. And that is like watching a gambler with no rebuys. And they're in a tournament or whatever, and they've got their stack of chips. When they start to acquire them or when they start to lose them, there's just an entirely different level of stress when that person knows there are no more after that. And I think that as a viewer, as a media person, as a fan watching this game, it brings a level of tension that's different. I don't feel like we've watched any other game this season and watched every play through the prism of when the win or loss of this game could mean everything. And I just don't think it was quite that in any other previous game, with all due respect to even the games that they've lost this season. This one just feels different. And Iowa State so elevated after this weekend. So elevated. They were just a team. They beat Kansas State like they do. And it does feel like they're, who is it, John Hyde, who got a little bit of, he got a little bit of Herman sassiness.
Yes.
Because Herman did lay, Herman, to be fair to John Hyde, Herman laid it on thicker in his opening comments about Iowa State, more so than he has about any team so far this season. I mean, he went in specifically about the front four and the nose tackle and their heights and their weights, and like, you know, he had stats. He respects the hell out of Iowa State. And I just don't know that any of us had seen that. And it did kind of make it sound like, I felt where John Hyde was coming from when he asked the question, but Herman took it way too literal. I don't think anybody else, but yeah, no,
What do I always say in these press conferences? When you are a reporter here, your questions have to be airtight.
Yeah.
When you talk to Herman, because if you leave that wiggle room and you just throw a loose phrase or loose few words out there, he's going to focus in on those few words.
He was like, the only one that heard that apparently was John Hyde. I was like, damn.
He said, I want to make sure that's the only one person who hears or heard that.
Yes.
Yes. I tell these guys all the time, man, you've got to prepare your question for him. You just have to. If you go open-ended,
He's so literal. So if you mess up a word, he's going to ignore what you asked and focused on the word that, and I do that too. Like I can spot it because I do it. Oh, people do that to me. If you come at me like Arlong today, he's like, I don't agree with your opinion. I was like, well, you weren't there, so you don't get to have an opinion. Like, you know, if I can find a place of weakness in the way that you've asked your question, I'll dismiss everything that you say and focus on that piece of weakness and make sure that I expose it to the bone. Tom does that too. So I recognize it. I know that technique, Tom. Anything else from today? Healthy team. You mentioned that. I mean, he really likes this Iowa State team. They're good. I think we're overcooking the grits a little bit with them though. Like, you know, Brock Purdy was sensational against Kansas State. I think it was like 21 of 27, three touchdowns. That dude had a 126 quarterback rating through the first seven games of this season. Mm. That's bad. That is so bad. That's the level of play that had us trying to get both Sam and Shane benched. Remember when we couldn't decide? Yeah. They were both awful. Yeah. That's the type of number that they were posting that every week would make us go, oh, the other guy looks better. And so what it told me, because I watched the game and I was like, holy crap, they're playing well. So Purdy's going to come in here and he'll be confident. But that was an anomaly. Like, I don't know what to think of Brock Purdy. He's not – now, that running back, he can ball.
Yeah, Breece Hall.
He can play. And I think he's a sophomore and 14 of his last 18 games, he's had 100 plus yards in. Like he's getting 100. He's getting a hundo against everybody. But there, you would think that Purdy would be feeding off of that. You would think if I come into the season and tell you this is going to be the best offensive player potentially in the Big 12 as the running back, you would think, well, Purdy's going to love that play action and, you know, one extra guy in the box and all this stuff. And Purdy has not been good. So I'm curious to see this Texas defense. They do stop the run pretty well. They have. They have. They'll need to. I have no idea what Purdy will show up. And consequently, I have no idea what Sam Ellinger will show up, because this Iowa State defense probably about as good as like Oklahoma State's. Like that's about, they're on that level. And Texas didn't really move the ball up and down the field against Oklahoma State either. Like that's not how they won that game. I wonder if this game plays out a lot like that game on War, where first 1-21 wins and it's a little bit of an ugly back and forth and somebody's got to make a really good play late in the game to win it.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if it's going to be like the Baylor game. And that's what I envisioned in my head. Like first of all, a message board that is lining up with fury all throughout the game, which, by the way, Catch will make sure to give you a promo code because it is holiday time. And some of you guys need to start joining our Orange Bloods message board because you're missing out on a lot of things. But I imagine our message board upset in the first quarter, upset in the first half. Fire him. And then all of a sudden Texas pulls out a victory and they win. And then everyone's like, ah, shit, now what? this feel, because you, everyone's like, they're expecting this outcome. It doesn't happen. And you just don't always see guys celebrating and being excited about it. But I'm not expecting fireworks, and I'm definitely not expecting a blowout on either side. Like I definitely don't foresee that coming. That hasn't been an MO of a Tom Herman team and Iowa State. And that's usually not how they roll either. I'll be very interested, Ketch, to see how this whole, I'm very intrigued. Because the thing that has me intrigued about a Ketch is that the stakes are just so high. Like you can't ignore. There's other things. This is why I asked my question last week. And, I didn't go there this week. I didn't want to be that guy. But the stakes are they're high. And I still go back to one of the original things that I've said last week. And I'll say this week, man, if he wins out, someone's got to show me. So I need someone to show me their balls. Like, that sounded horrible. I just see someone taking that clip and using it in taking it out of context. But I need someone to show me their kahunas that's going to tell me, like, yes, we're going to fire a coach that won eight games during a pandemic. Like we're going to fire him because he lost in the Big 12 championship game, without cause. I have to see that. I'm just not 100% convinced. I know what people are thinking, but that's why it makes these stakes so high, I want to go back to something you said. It all ties in. I don't think we hear Chris Delcani. You said, what did we hear from him? We'll hear from him after the season, but one of two things have happened. Either he comes out and says, he's my coach. Like, why'd you guys say, I never said that this guy was in jeopardy. I never said this guy was, that's what you guys said. That's what the media said. You guys were putting that out there on message boards and all your report in and all these things I was hearing about. I never said it. I never said a word. He'll say that. Or he'll say, and I want to introduce our new coach. It'll be one of the two extremes, but he's not going to come out in between. He's going to stay in his bunker and let things play out and see how it goes. So the stakes are high. And so because the stakes are so high, and because I still think Texas has a lot of advantages, not a lot, but a few working in their favor. Friday can't get here soon enough. I'll go watch the Lions on Thursday, go watch the Cowboys. I don't know who's the night game. And then I'll be, you know, wake up in the morning first thing and head over there and see what this the whole thing looks like.
You and I both have bleak fantasy football outlooks.
Oh yeah, it's a wrap.
But you and I are both in the same spot. Like the season ends without a win for both of us. How you feeling? You've got Cooper Kupp going up against the Tampa kicker.
Yeah, but Cooper's got to play some really good defense, though.
And you've got a 3.5 point lead going in. I'm not putting you on a spot to jinx yourself. 60-40, though. You mathematically, you'd rather be in your position than the other way around, right?
Technically, yes. But Cooper Kupp, as I look it up now that you say it, yeah, 2.6 points in one game against San Francisco, had 8.9 against Chicago, and he had 7.5 recently. Like, he's been in single digits 4 out of the last 5 games.
And I'm going to make you feel better. Well, no, I'm not. Because Suck Up has had 15 and 17 in 2 of the last 3.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. It's going to be, yeah. God, yours is close. Mine's close too, because I didn't start Janu Smith because I thought his floor was too slow. It was too high. Like I thought it's possible because he hadn't had more than 2 catches in like 19 straight games. Mm-hmm. I went with Hayden Hurst, thinking that I figured his ceiling was lower, but his basement was higher. He got a donut. He got a 0. Hayden Hurst had a 0. 0.0.
Yes, I'm looking on it now. I'm looking now.
And and so I go in with a 15.25-ish lead. And he's got Ronald Jones going. And I'm trying to decide, like, both of us are going to either win or lose by a point or two.
Absolutely.
Tonight's going to either. And the thing is, like, it's probably just a stay of the execution. But there's a level of tension, Anwar, that I'm prepared to, like, I'm expecting the blade tonight.
I mean, you need one or two things. I mean, you need a close game. Like, you need a close game. What you don't want is, or actually take it back. You need Tampa Bay falling so far behind that they just abandon the run game. That's what you need. Like, you need it where they're down 21-0 after one, and they just said, man, Tom Brady's got to throw. Because what you don't need is a close game where they're just handing the ball to Ronald and they're trying to pound the rock or anything like that. You just definitely need a game. That's your best case scenario.
It feels like if you tell me right now, because I'm looking at Ronald Jones's fantasy points per game, if Ronald Jones has 20 carries tonight, I'm screwed. But if he has like 15, unless 2 of those are touchdowns, I'll be all right. But when he's 3 times this season, he's had 20 or more carries, 15.8, 25.1, 24.3. So they're feeding him the ball like that. Yeah, man. I'll just become an Anwar fan at that point.
Well,
I got nothing else to do. All right, until next week, because there wouldn't be a reason to cheer for you either.
No, well, I mean, I think you and I are headed to the – well, I think you and I are headed to the same fate, unfortunately. And you know, it's just, and I just had some blown opportunities early in the year, and it just is what it is. And the last couple of years hasn't been good. And I thought I drafted well, and but I just lost some games early by a couple of points, and that's just how it goes. And you know, once Dustin knocks me off, then it just is what it is. With two more games left, and it's over. And actually, it's so bad, Ketch. There was like last week, I had a chance to at least get the most points scored. And I said, well, if I could at least get that, that would be something nice. I scored 152.17 points. Dustin scored 153.86.
Oh man.
And he took the most points scored. And I couldn't even get like whatever, is it $50, whatever. I couldn't even get that as a reward.
That's hardcore.
I'll just say this
before we sign off. I've never been more wretched as a fantasy owner than this year. Like I mentioned the Hayden Hurst fiasco this week. Last week, I talked myself into captaining a player who I picked up that hour and then he didn't play. And I lost because I didn't have a captain. Like just anything I can touch this year. I've lost games by less than a point. I think I won. It has not been good. You got anything else you want to close out with besides our fantasy sorrows?
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone who's listening to the podcast. Hope you guys have a good time doing whatever you want to do. I'm not a huge you got to do traditional food. So if you do pizzas or do something like that, but happy Thanksgiving to everyone who listens to us, who supports us, who's from week one until now listens to the Overreaction Mondays. I just want to tell you we appreciate it. We appreciate the love. I haven't seen all the numbers, but I can tell from the feedback that I received that they've been pretty good. So to you and yours, and even if you're spending it alone, I hope you find a couple little things to do for yourself. So it's not a sad occasion. So happy Thanksgiving to everyone who listens to us and supports us.
Can't say it any better than that for myself and Anwar Richardson and the entire Orange Bloods family. Here's to you and your family. You guys be safe. Be smart. We'll talk to you next week. Later.